From the newsrooms of the Sydney Morning Herald and The Age, this is Please Explain Daily. I'm Tori Maguire and it is Thursday, July 2. KPMG has questioned the future of the Sydney Theatre Company in its latest financial audit report, casting significant doubt on the institution's ability to stay afloat. While much of their financial stress is a result of the coronavirus pandemic, the STC has had cash flow issues since the closure of its Walsh Bay theatres in the beginning of 2019. In other troubling entertainment news, the Cirque du Soleil Entertainment Group has filed for bankruptcy. The company will lay off over 3,500 people in an attempt to recover from a debt of nearly $1 billion. I'm joined now by senior culture writer Nathaniel Cooper. Welcome back to Please Explain Daily, Nathaniel.
Thank you. It's great to be back.
I wish we were here to talk about exciting entertainment news, but it's just a little bit hard to do that in the light of the pandemic. I want to start by talking about Cirque du Soleil. It's a massive global corporate entertainment company, and it's gone into administration.
It has, yeah. They've filed for bankruptcy protection to prepare for what could be a completely disastrous thing for the company.
So how does a business like that, obviously they're not functioning at the moment because no one's allowed to go out, but why can't a company like that just mothball its operations?
Because they have no income coming in. You know, like so many businesses during the pandemic, they have no way of making any money. They've tried a few times. There was one occasion in China where they tried to get one of their shows back up, but the amount of people going in to see the show was not matching the amount of money it was costing to put the show on. It's not like a cafe that can sell coffees out of their window or, you know, a newspaper that can still sell newspapers, for example. They have no way to make money anymore.
So this is thousands of creative people out of jobs now.
Yeah, 3,500 people have lost their job just from Cirque du Soleil alone around the world. And Cirque du Soleil is a unique organization in that they employ an enormous number of acrobats and circus artists who don't necessarily have the opportunity to go anywhere else. There are no other organizations to the scale of Cirque du Soleil. So there are a lot of people who have very specific skill sets that if Cirque doesn't get back up, there's going to be very limited opportunities for them to use them elsewhere.
And those people were permanent employees, weren't they? Which is unusual in the arts to have that sort of consistency. They would have thought once you got a job at Cirque du Soleil, you
set
were
for
set.
Life. Yeah, until your injuries mean that you can no longer do it anymore. And then often there were pathways within Cirque du Soleil for you to go into creating new shows. It's a nice organization in that way that once you have reached the end of your performance life, then there are opportunities to go into other areas of the business.
Do you think there's any optimism about being able to resurrect Cirque du Soleil, even if it's in 3 or 4 years' time post-pandemic?
I think Cirque started as a very small company doing very small shows and has grown and grown and grown. I think the people behind Cirque will be eager to start back up in some way. I don't know whether you'll have Grand Chapiteaux touring in every continent in January next year, but it is the kind of performance art that can return to being small and then grow big again. I think also Cirque hasn't really evolved over the time. It's just got bigger and bigger doing the same thing. And I think audiences were probably tiring of that a little bit. So this is an opportunity. If they do have to shut down completely and start again, it's an opportunity to think, well, how can we do this differently? How can we be a different company going forward?
So what does it tell us, Nathaniel, about what kind of arts organisations are going to survive or not survive the pandemic? Because as you said, it's a huge, big global sort of conglomerate. Is there signs of hope that smaller, more nimble organisations are going to get through it?
I think the smaller and more nimble and more able to, you know, run on the smell of an oily rag organisations are actually going to be the ones that survive more fruitfully, because organisations like Belvoir or Griffin are looking at putting on one-person shows, which compared to a Cirque du Soleil production are much cheaper to put on. So I think those sort of organisations, which can be nimble, can throw something together a lot more quickly, rehearse something more quickly with a smaller cast and a smaller crew, we're going to see them survive like just by the skin of their teeth. They'll be able to survive. The bigger organizations, the bigger productions that have huge costs of cast on stage and crew behind the scenes that need full houses are going to have to keep waiting for the opportunity to go back on stage. They're going to keep losing money as they're waiting, and their ability to carry on is a lot more challenging.
Which brings us to the Sydney Theatre Company, which is still afloat at the moment, but it's in danger, isn't it?
It is in danger. The annual report came out last week, I think, and the auditor said they had significant doubt over its ability to stay afloat. I think that is looking at the worst case scenario for STC. I think it's an organisation that's beloved by the community in Sydney, the people of New South Wales, but also more broadly Australians and around the world. STC has performed on Broadway, for example. It is a well-respected and beloved organisation. And if it reaches the point where they need to be bailed out, I think you will find people putting their hand in their pocket to help.
Are they going to have to change the way they do things, Nathaniel? Because one of the things I have thought about STC is that they might have a demographic challenge now, because I would say that for every one performance I see at STC, my mum probably sees four, and her generation are going to be going out less.
Yeah, I think that is going to be a challenge for all arts organisations to demonstrate to younger people why they're relevant, why they're important. I think particularly this year, KIPP's program was very much accessible and exciting for a younger demographic, and it's a huge shame that some of those productions won't be seen. The production with Erin Jean Norville of The Picture of Dorian Gray would have been such a fantastic opportunity for people in their 20s to go and see theatre, perhaps for the first time, and see exciting, vital theatre. And it's an absolute tragedy that that isn't going to be seen this year. Hopefully they'll bring it back. But all arts organisations, opera companies, symphony orchestras are going to have to really rethink the programming they do, the way they market themselves to encourage younger people to go to the theatre, because older people are still going to be concerned about the pandemic, whereas people my age are like, meh, give me coronavirus.
Yeah. Nathaniel, are there any other sort of iconic Australian arts organisations visibly in trouble?
Yeah, Melbourne Symphony Orchestra have been very vocal about their concerns beyond September when the JobKeeper package, whatever the government plans to do with it.
Are there musicians on JobKeeper?
They've got musicians on JobKeeper. They've got staff on JobKeeper. The government did announce last week their JobMaker package, which has $35 million for sector-significant organisations. So they're existing Commonwealth-funded companies that need help to stay afloat. So $35 million has been made available to those significant organisations. How that plays out, we still don't know. The department is still figuring out what all these things mean. But I think every arts organisation, whether it's funded by the government or supported by the state or a commercial organisation, they're all starting to sweat.
At the beginning of the pandemic, when we started to flatten our curve and it looked like we were getting to the point where we are in New South Wales now, where restrictions are lifting, there was some hope that we'd be back in the theatre by September, October, November. But last week, Qantas announced that they were not going to be doing any significant international flying for 12 more months. That must have hit hard in those big arts organisations that rely on international ticket sales.
You know, last time I was on Please Explain, we were talking about Hamilton, Moulin Rouge and Frozen being the shows that come back. And then you also have to consider Harry Potter. Harry Potter has an enormous amount of its audience coming from overseas, and that's not going to happen. Harry Potter's in a completely different position to other shows in that the tickets are so desirable that I think Australians will be able to fill the gap, because, you know, you have to wait several months to be able to get into that show. Something like Frozen, which would have been enormously popular with the Asian market, even America comes in to see musicals. I think they're going to be concerned about how they're going to sustain a season in Sydney now when you can't have international guests.
When was Frozen supposed to start?
Frozen was supposed to be open now, actually, and they've delayed the season to December. They've invested so much money in getting that show up, I'd say we'll still see it in December, but I think we'll probably see a shorter season than they're originally intending.
Is there any word from the Hamilton people?
I spoke to Michael Castle, the producer of Hamilton, a couple of weeks ago, and he is absolutely adamant that it will be going on in March 2020. That'll be a year after the pandemic. So I feel confident that we'll see Hamilton in 2021. Yeah, I think, again, depending on what the international borders are looking like, what the internal borders within Australia look like, how long those seasons can stay.
Yeah, so you wouldn't be able to put Harry Potter on now in Melbourne, because no one's allowed to go to Melbourne.
No, that's right. And
even Melburnians are not allowed to move around.
No.
Just on Hamilton, we talked last time about how they were doing remote casting. How's that going?
I think they've still got a couple of roles to cast. They're being very quiet about it, which means they're probably imminently going to announce who their cast are, which is extremely exciting.
Yeah.
But all the producers in Australia who are working with international creative teams and people all over the country who need to remain socially distant are finding new and exciting ways to do this casting process. And I think that's going to be really interesting to see how it comes out, but how they do business in the future.
Well, it's hard to imagine that even on the other side of this pandemic, it won't have changed the way everything operates and the way the arts operates.
Yeah.
It's a positive thing to say there are opportunities in it, but it's still pretty devastating.
It is pretty devastating, but the arts will always survive, and it might look different, it might feel different, and it might be slightly stressful for the people that make art, but, you know, on the other side of this, and I think real soon in places like Brisbane and Sydney and South Australia, I think we'll be going back into the theatre soon.
That'll be very exciting.
I can't wait.
Today's episode of Please Explain was produced by Yuji Shimada and Amelia Maguire. The journalists, editors, photographers, producers and tech team from The Age and the Sydney Morning Herald work tirelessly to cover the news that matters. For coverage you can trust, visit our websites or buy our papers. To support our journalism, you can subscribe via our homepages or just search Subscribe, The Sydney Morning Herald or The Age. I'm Tori Maguire. Thanks for listening.